May it please the court. I'm David Migliaccio, number 8404, representing the appellant Troy Mellons. This is a case in which lack of precision has led to an appeal, as it so frequently does. The statute, 18-1405, was created to give teeth to the constitutional right to speedy trial. That's why the statute defines a period that gives body to the constitutional right for speedy trial. In this case, we had a trial court that took us backwards from the precision of the statute into murkiness. And that's the entire problem with the case. We had a trial court. I was very interested to hear the previous oral argument and the questions about should there not be evidence underlying a judge's findings of fact. That's a problem with this case, too. In this case, too, not only do we really lack findings of fact, but we have a judge who dispensed with evidence, dispensed with an offer of proof on the part of the prosecution, dispensed with the need for findings of fact, and simply recited the legal conclusions of the statute as being sufficient to bring the continuance in question within the exclusionary provisions of the statute. I want to be clear, too, about which continuance we're talking about. As I read the record, we are not talking about the continuance that took place on April 26th, which is the first continuance requested by the prosecution. We are talking about the continuance that took place on July 26th, which was the second trial date.
July 26th or July 27th?
I guess it is July 27th. They appeared on July 26th, and they certainly there was a continuance from the 26th to the 27th, and then the continuance on the 27th as well.
Let me ask you a question. Did the prosecution, as I understand it from the record and the briefs, the six-month speedy trial deadline was August 11th?
Yes, I think everybody agreed to that.
Did the prosecution ever ask for a continuance beyond that date?
Not that I saw, Your Honor. No. In fact, the prosecution asked to hold the August 9th date. And it was the trial court that said, well, that's not my criminal week. So I've looked at the statute, and it's interesting, the first time we see evidence that the trial court looked at the statute was on the 27th. Well, now I've looked at the statute. So the trial court didn't look at the statute on the 26th of April. It looked at the statute on the 27th and said, oh, I see, I've got a reason I can move it out to the 16th. That was one of the several errors that the trial court committed.
I think it's your position that the statute requires that he can make the continuance under 4056G1 only if there is a motion by the prosecution. He cannot do it, or the trial court cannot do it on its own motion?
Well, I guess I find myself in a position of relying on the language of the statute. The statute says it has to be a continuance requested by the prosecution. I mean, we're not hanging our hat on that provision, but certainly it's a problem when a trial court, I mean, again, things became murky because the trial court didn't adhere to the statute. The trial court on the 27th says, or actually I believe it was the 16th of August, by which time speedy trial we contend had passed, said, do I hear you, Ms. Prosecutor, to be requesting a continuance because of the unavailability of a witness who's under subpoena and for whom a bench warrant has issued? Did I miss anything? And the prosecutor says, yes.
That's on the 16th.
That's on the 16th. And so, no, the prosecution, the record's clear that the prosecution, and that brings up an interesting point, too, because why would the prosecution not seek to invoke the exclusion if it thought it had grounds? I don't think the prosecution believed that it had grounds to get the exclusion from speedy trial. That's why the prosecution pointedly wanted to stay within speedy. They wanted the August 9th date.
Presumably, as they thought that this witness would be arrested and hauled into court by August 9th.
Presumably because they thought that. Or at least.
But we have no record of that one way or the other.
No, we don't. I would also say, though, that there's a strong practice at the trial level, both on the part of prosecutors and judges, they do not want to mess with statutory speedy trial if they can help it. Because they know that the difference between the statutory speedy trial and the constitutional speedy trial is that statutory speedy trial says 6 months. We can calculate it. We can say August 11th. Both of the parties who have the burden of proof in this case are loath to go beyond those deadlines unless they absolutely have to. So I think it's worthwhile, too. Here's the question. The question is, then, what is an adequate showing? If the question is, what needs to underlie the trial court's findings of fact? What's an adequate showing? And I submit that it is evidence of some sort. In Roberts, it was an offer of proof. All right? In Roberts, the trial court accepted the offer of proof. And I would encourage this court to look at the offer of proof in Roberts. It's specific. It talks about a witness who's pregnant in Nebraska. Here are her circumstances, so on and so on and so forth. And it's in the form of an offer of proof. So it has evidentiary value. Take a look at Marcus, which involves a case. That's a case in which there's evidence that the sheriff testified as to what efforts were being made, and now we're talking about due diligence, that the sheriff testified, but his testimony was not in the record, so that was not found to be sufficient. There has to be a showing. That this is something that I wrestled with as I looked at this case. What is a showing? I looked at the Black's Law Dictionary definition, and it involves something around evidence. But I've always thought that a showing needs to be more than counsel standing up and saying something in an informal way rather than an informal offer of proof or providing witnesses. Note that the defense counsel was constantly hammering on, we haven't seen a showing of the likelihood that this evidence will be available at a later date. And in that vein, Judge Iupa jumps right past all the need for any proof of that by saying, well, I've issued a bench warrant, so we can assume that there's a likelihood. That's bootstrapping. That does not. This is a witness who already showed that she was willing to ignore a subpoena when she didn't appear on the 26th of July. What makes anybody think? And incidentally, if we look back farther in the record, take a look at the record on April 26th. On April 26th, the record reflects that the prosecutor stood up and said specifically, we have a witness who's dodging our investigator and dodging our service of process, hangs up when our investigator or our process server calls. That tells us that if anything, there's a likelihood the witness won't show up. So what the question, again, my question would be, what would be the harm of having an actual showing? The defense requested a hearing here. The defense consistently requested a hearing. And it didn't have to be a three-hour dog and pony show. All it had to be was the prosecutor specifically identifies an investigator and a process server. The process server, they provide maybe an affidavit from the process server or a testimony. But the process server says, yes, I know she's in town. We just haven't got her. She's pretty good at dodging service of process, but she's not as good at dodging service of process as we are at serving. We're going to get her sooner or later. That's a showing. A showing is not the trial court jumps to the conclusions set forth in the statute without findings and without something without a showing underlying that.
Prosecution also have to show that it's the witnesses or the evidence is material?
Yes.
I mean, presumably they would want to come in and say, we can't prove our case without this lady or something like that.
That is that. Of course, you have to see that. And materiality is another question. There's a strong temptation to say, well, this is the complaining witness, the alleged victim in a domestic violence case. Isn't that enough? It was enough for Judge Iupa. But it's not enough for Sweet or Roberts, which say that it is insufficient for the prosecution to simply say our chief witness is missing without demonstrating materiality. Now, is that the be-all and end-all? No, it isn't, but it's another illustration of how the trial court failed to comply with the statute. And again, we wind up with a murky record. And a murky record is not what the case law requires. The case law says a showing has to create a sufficient record for appellate review. That's the formulation that the case law requires. Do we have that here? I submit we do not. We have a sufficient record for the appellate court to say that there was not compliance with the statute. Again, the purpose of the statute, the purpose of the speedy trial statute, to give teeth, to give body, to give specificity to the underlying constitutional right. When the defense is there requesting a hearing, when the defense is objecting, when it would be no great burden to require a showing, it will not do for the trial court to go off on its own for the reason that it's not my criminal week. That's not sufficient. I would like to reserve the balance of my time, if I may.
Thank you, counsel. Add a little over 4 minutes for any rebuttal that you would like.
Oh, I can't figure out how to work the podium. Sorry, Your Honors. May it please the court, Nicole Wiggins, registration number 42702, appearing on behalf of the people in this matter, Your Honors. The defendant in this case was charged with menacing, third-degree assault, and false imprisonment after he locked his girlfriend in their bedroom and allegedly struck her and demanded that she give him money. She was the only victim. She was the only witness to defendant's crime, as this was a crime of domestic violence. And the issue in this case is whether under the relevant statute, a continuance was properly granted due to her absence. And the statute at issue requires three things: materiality, due diligence on the part of the prosecution in seeking this missing witness, and reasonable belief that this witness will be available at some point in the future. And in this case, the people provided adequate information regarding the missing witness for the court to exercise its independent judgment. Now, first, the court properly found that the witness was material.
When did the court?
The court found that the witness was material on July 27th, Your Honor, before speedy trial ran, when it specifically found that the statute that we're discussing here today applied and read that statute on the record to indicate that the court was stating this statute applies, this statute has been satisfied, let's move forward. That's what happened on July 27th. The findings that happened on August 16th give further effect to those findings, but the court did find on July 27th specifically that this statute does apply in this case, and that the testimony of this victim, which testimony is material if it is more than merely probative. In this case, this witness's testimony was more than merely probative. It was the basis of the whole prosecution.
Counsel, please, counsel.
Yes.
Is there anything in the record showing that the court ever weighed the materiality of the victim's testimony against the defendant's interest in receiving a speedy trial?
No, Your Honor, there's nothing in the record that specifically shows the court weighing different interests and putting that on the record. However, the court was aware that this was a domestic violence case in which this was the named victim, that this was essentially going to be a he said, she said case, and that the prosecution's witness slash victim was really the whole basis of the prosecution, that it would be obvious and essential for her presence in such a case.
How do we know that the court knew all those facts and took that into consideration?
Your Honor, the court did advise the defendant of the charges in this case. The charges specifically stated this was a domestic violence case. Also on the record, there is evidence of, before the speedy trial date ran, of everybody discussing the endorsement of a domestic violence expert in this case. So the court was aware that this was a domestic violence case and that this was the named victim. The prosecution did make it clear that this was the named victim in the case. And based on those factors, the court correctly concluded that this witness's testimony would be material to the prosecution's case in an essential he said, she said case.
How do we know the court concluded that this witness's testimony would be material?
By finding that the statute specifically applied, Your Honor, the court implicitly found that, and it basically read the statute on the record and said this has been satisfied. That implicitly finds that the witness's testimony was material and also that the other two factors were satisfied under the statute.
So it sounds like what you're saying, and maybe I'm oversimplifying, but that as long as the court reads the statute aloud, it's not necessary to make any other findings, that we should just assume that the court has made whatever findings are necessary to support the statute he's just read?
That's not necessarily what I'm saying, Your Honor, but the court did say after it read the statute that this specifically applies, and there's other information on the record to indicate that the court, the prosecution had offered the fact that this was the victim. It is not as if the court just read the statute out of the blue and there had been no discussion about why a continuance was being sought. The court was aware that the main victim in the domestic violence case was being sought, and to that effect, the defendant never specifically challenged the materiality, and everybody, including defense counsel, proceeded as though that this witness was material given the nature of this case, as defense counsel's objections mostly focused on her future availability. Defense counsel never stood up and said, the fact that this witness is the victim is not enough materiality for me. That objection was never made. Everybody went on assuming, given the nature of this case, that this witness's testimony was going to be material. And the lack of a specific objection in that regard, I think, lends to the credence that this was an understood thing that was going on between all parties in the case. And when the judge read the statute out loud, he was just giving more effect to what had already been discussed.
How do you deal with the fact that the prosecution didn't ask for, indeed, an extension beyond August 11th, and indeed said, we'd like you to keep the trial date of August 9th, and it was only the trial court saying, well, gee, that's not my criminal week, so I'd like to push it off further. I mean, how do you deal with that? That's clear. That by itself clearly isn't a proper basis for continuance under the statute.
Well, Your Honor, the statute does not state or require that the prosecution request a continuance past the speedy trial deadline. It simply states that the prosecution requests a continuance over defendant's objection based on a missing witness. Now, and that's what the prosecution did. The prosecution said, Your Honor, my victim, my witness is not here. I am seeking a continuance. The fact that the prosecution was hopeful that they could get the witness in before the speedy trial date is evidence of due diligence and future availability in this case, but simply because the court looked at the statute and found that it applied without the necessary prompting of the prosecution doesn't make this a complete sua sponte continuance on the court's part. The court didn't just wake up and decide it wanted to continue that case. The prosecution still had to ask for that, and the prosecution did not necessarily, under the statute, specifically have to ask for a certain date beyond the speedy trial deadline. The prosecution just needed to set forward that their main witness was missing, that they were seeking a continuance, and the fact that this statute applied allowed the court to grant that six-month stay in the speedy trial deadline. In terms of due diligence, the prosecution repeatedly established that they were continually seeking the witness. At the first trial date, the prosecution stated that the witness, they had spoken to the witness, they were continuing to seek the witness. She was evading service, but that they were continuing to seek her. And the proof of that is by the time the second trial date rolls around, we do have her under service. That's before speedy trial runs. We do have her under service. And as soon as she doesn't show up, the prosecution asks for a no bond warrant. They want to get this witness in the court. They are trying to get her here. There's no doubt about that on the record. The prosecution did make that clear. And also in terms of due diligence, after the July 26th date, the prosecutor again says, Your Honor, can we just hold this open? I believe we'll be able to procure her by tomorrow. They sent out their investigator again. The prosecution there's no allegation of bad faith in this case. There's no indication that this is a dilatory tactic on the behalf of the prosecution. All the evidence goes towards the fact that they were trying to get her there. In terms of future availability, the prosecutor, as I just stated, repeatedly indicated to the court they were seeking the witness, their investigator had been going out, and that they anticipated and expected to get her under service and have her there. The fact that they did have firm contact information for this witness and a warrant had been issued for her arrest gave the court indication it was only a matter of time before they get her in there. It's only a matter of time before they grab her, basically. And we do know that they had firm contact information for her.
So why not keep the August 9th date then, which was what the prosecutor specifically asked for on July 27th?
The court, I guess the answer to your question is, Your Honor, the court did what it was allowed to do. And it could have kept the August 9th date, but then we would have had to have another continuance in this case.
Why? How do you know? If you just said the prosecutor was hopeful that they were going to get her in there any minute. August 9th was almost 2 weeks off. And it's within speedy trial. And the only reason the court on the record said he didn't like that date was because that wasn't his regular criminal docket.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is what the court stated. However, once the statute applies, it doesn't necessarily matter in why the court is choosing a certain date. And in this case, once the statute was found to be applicable and the court set that date, it doesn't, just because the prosecutor was maybe trying to be a little more amenable, doesn't mean that the court stepped out of line.
So I guess that I understand that. But doesn't that then go to Judge Hawthorne's question about if that's what the judge wanted to do, shouldn't he have made some findings about, well, I'm balancing these various factors and this is how I come out, and we don't have any of that.
Your Honor, certainly there could have been made some more findings in this case. The court could have made a further record in hindsight, Your Honor. But in this case, the court made enough of a record, there was enough information in the record that was available to everyone for him to find this statute applicable and for him to continue this case. So for all the reasons, the people contend that the trial court properly continued the case and properly found that the statute in question did apply. And if there are no further questions from the court, the people respectfully ask that this court affirm defendant's conviction.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Well, to clear up a couple of things, first of all, the defense did specifically object to the lack of showing materiality. On page 3, and I'm sorry, I don't have the record citation, but on page 3 of the motion that it filed on August 6th, it filed a motion to dismiss. And on page 3, you will see that one of the complaints the defense has is that there's been no showing that the evidence is material. I mean, the defense went right down the line with the statute and said there's been no showing of these things. We get back to that question again. What constitutes a specific showing? Every once in a while, I get a case that actually takes me back to law school. And I'll be honest that when I was in law school, I sometimes had questions about whether I was learning anything that was really going to help me in the real practice of law. And it's nice to find that my time in law school was not completely wasted, because I learned that when a judge makes an order, he makes findings of fact, she makes conclusions of law, and we come up with an order when those two things are applied to each other. Here we have a judge who feels it sufficient to read the statute into the record. The timing that the judge found necessary, he found it necessary to look at the record when he needed to move the case from the 9th to the 16th of August. That timing is interesting, to say the least. And that by itself indicates, if the record shows anything, it shows that Judge Iupa moved this case outside of speedy trial. And for the convenience of the court, for the sake of the court's meeting his criminal docket at a convenient time for the court. So the question becomes then, there is some question in the briefs as to whether it's jurisdictional. I submit to you that the Owen case, the other cases cited, are established that it is jurisdictional. The state has indicated that the subject matter jurisdiction is not implicated. I would agree with that. the court certainly has the ability to continue to hear criminal cases, but it loses its jurisdiction over the person. It lost its jurisdiction over Mr. Mellons. And importantly, in conclusion, we submit that it lost its jurisdiction over Mr. Mellons when it failed to do what I think it was you, Judge Miller, suggested that it do, which was simply keep the ninth date and see what happens. Then you've set it within speedy trial, and then you can have your inquiry, then you can have a showing, and then you can do what is appropriate. Once it failed to do that and allowed the case to go beyond the 11th, it lost jurisdiction over Mr. Mellons and should have dismissed the case when it was requested to do so by trial counsel. If there are no other questions, we would ask that this court reverse the trial court and send it back for dismissal.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for your helpful arguments. The case will stand submitted. We'll issue an opinion in due course.